Welcome to Life Study of the Bible with Witness Lee, a program provided by Living Stream Ministry and featuring the ministry of Watchman Nee and Witness Lee. Witness Lee, a servant of the Lord for over 7 decades on 5 continents, culminated his ministry with a 21-year, book-by-book exposition of the entire Bible, which he called a life study. And we're delighted to bring you short portions of this spoken ministry on today's broadcast. Now, let's join today's life study.
After years of being persecuted at the hand of evil King Saul, David has finally become king, fulfilling the promise that Jehovah had given to him as a young boy. Now the entire nation of Israel was with him, and even the surrounding nations lent their support to him as king. But most importantly, David had Jehovah's presence with him as well. With all things fully in order, under God's sovereign arrangement, what would David turn his attention to now? Many before him had sought greater riches or glory for themselves, but David had a different kind of heart. David had a heart that was fully one with the Lord, and so with his own house in order, David turned his full attention to God's house. What a marvelous picture and pattern for us as believers today. Bob Danker has joined us for this fellowship. And Bob, I love these middle chapters in 2 Samuel. They really are compelling and very touching, aren't they?
They really are, Chris. David was such a person who had a heart for God's interests. Every one of God's people should be like David. David was a pattern, an example for us. We should not just care for the things that relate to us.
Right.
In our relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing is whether God is satisfied or not, whether he has what his heart desires. And when he is happy, then we can be full of joy and rejoicing.
Well, let's look at a couple verses now. We're talking today about chapters 6 and 7 in 2 Samuel. And David now, as we mentioned in the introduction, fully established as the king. One of the neighboring kings sends even great cedars to help build his house, indicating a kind of a support and a satisfaction with the fact that this one, David, had become king over Israel. In 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 2, the king said to Nathan the prophet, "See now, I dwell in a house of cedar, but the ark of God dwells within curtains." And by this time, of course, the ark had been stolen by the Philistines, carried off for many years, and then partially returned and sort of residing in a temporary place, right, Bob?
That's right. I believe at this time it was residing in a home of one of the Israelites.
Right. Well, Bob, now for many years the ark has been away from its designated place. It had been carried off by the Philistines and then returned somewhat under David's leadership when he was heading up the armies. It was brought back to Israel, but it was not in its permanent home, which ultimately would be in the Holy of Holies, in the temple, in the city of Jerusalem.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's pick up the story now. Really, what we want to see most carefully is this compass that guides David and drives him, his desire for God's house to be fully built up rather than his own.
After so many happenings, all working together in favor of David, David was fully satisfied. Now he is the king of Judah and the king of all the tribes of God's people. He got his stronghold, Zion. He got a capital, Jerusalem. And also he got a palace built up with cedar from Lebanon. He got everything. He got everything under God's presence plus God's sovereignty. Now, he surely should have thought about God's dwelling place on this earth. He knew the history. By his time, he was in the palace of cedar, yet God's ark representing God is there still as a guest in a host home. So he couldn't tolerate. He decided to remove God's ark to a settled place. So his heart here is on God's house, on God's habitation. This is worthwhile of much consideration on our part. We ought to know whatever God would do for us and whatever gift God would give to us, that should be all together for this further consideration, to have a dwelling place settled up for God even on this earth. This might be a great shame to God's enemy. God's enemy, Satan, has been struggling for generations to usurp this earth, to abuse this earth, even to occupy this earth. So in a sense, God was chased away from the earth. But now, here is a man. He is, according to God, no doubt, he is for God, he is with God, he is even one with God. So he would prepare a place for God to get himself settled on this earth.
Bob, in the coming segments of the program, we can talk more about the significance of the Ark and why it was so important to David. But I'd like to talk in this first segment more about the overarching principle that we see here. And that is that David interpreted all that he had received from Jehovah in one very unique and specific way, didn't he?
Yes. At this point, Chris, God had done so much for David. When he was there under Saul, God in his sovereignty protected David and kept him in every way. And then eventually Saul declined and was killed.
Right.
And David was established to be the king over all the tribes of Israel. This was all done by God in his sovereignty, because God wanted David to be the king so that God could have a kingdom on the earth. And the purpose of God having a kingdom was so that a dwelling place might be built up on the earth, so that God could dwell on the earth among his people. This is why God wanted the nation of Israel, or the people of Israel, to be formed into a nation under a proper king. And David was such a proper king. So God did everything for David to establish David, and he gave David the wealth to build himself a very fine home.
So
David was dwelling in comfort. And yet at this point, God, represented by the Ark, had not yet obtained a solid, permanent dwelling place on the earth. David realized what was in God's heart. This is a great thing for a man to recognize what is in the heart of God. Once we realize what is in God's heart, surely our heart could be moved to give ourselves to carry out what is in God's heart. And this is what happened with David. David was a man who was not occupied with himself and with his own interests as Saul had been. David was a man who could respond to God, to God's need, to God's desire, and could give himself to accomplish that which was in God's heart. This is a great thing.
This is a great thing. It somewhat turns the light on us. We spend a lot of our time, a lot of our daily lives, a lot of our mental energy, emotional energy, consumed with what we think we need. And especially, I think, in the culture and society we live in today, have achieved some level of comfort and satisfaction, you know, for their own needs. But is our reaction comparable to David's at that point? Where does our interest lie? Well, I think we have to be quite honest and say many times it turns to just getting even more, or getting even more comfortable or more acquired for ourselves, but not at all the pattern that David presents.
That's right. The things that God had done for David were in the physical realm. And related to us, Chris, God has done many things for us in the spiritual realm.
Yeah.
Yet even in our spiritual pursuing or relationship with the Lord, we may still be essentially self-centered, not caring at all for what is in the heart of God. This is a big light shining upon us, and we need to open to the Lord and pray, Lord, give me a heart like David's.
Yeah.
Give me a heart for what is in your heart. Deliver me from from being occupied with myself.
Let's talk about the Ark now, Bob. Why was it such something that had such a compelling driving force upon David? We know that the Ark was built under Moses' direction, the instructions received by the Lord back in Exodus. At that time, it resided in the tabernacle, God's temporary dwelling place, until the children of Israel were to arrive in the good land. From Exodus chapter 40 and chapter 25, we see a couple of things that will be highlighted, I think, in this coming portion. Then he took the testimony and put it into the ark. This is from Exodus 40, speaking of Moses. And he brought the ark into the tabernacle and set up the veil for the screen and screened the ark of the testimony as Jehovah had commanded Moses. And from chapter 25 in Exodus, and there I will meet with you, Jehovah says, and I will speak with you from above the expiation cover, from between the two cherubim, which are upon the ark of the testimony, of everything which I will give you in commandment to the children of Israel. Marvelous, Bob, a place where God and man meet and a place where God can speak to man.
Very marvelous.
All right, let's join Witness Lee as we really get into this matter of the Ark in more depth.
You have to know the history of the Ark of God. The history of the Ark of God just equals the history of God. The Ark is the embodiment of the moving and working God. And the Ark typifies Christ. All the Bible students and teachers agree with this point. This Ark is different from the Ark built by Noah. That was a big Ark, becoming a big boat. But this Ark is very small, built with acacia wood, covered with the gold. And this Ark became the center of the tabernacle. With the tabernacle, there was firstly the outer court. Then in the tabernacle, there is the first layer. That is called the holy place. Then the inner chamber, that's called the Holy of Holies. Within this Holy of Holies, which is the inner chamber, the very, very center of the tabernacle, the Ark was. And that is the very spot on which God came to meet his people, and on which he gave his people the freedom to contact him. So there was a kind of a place that God and man can be appeased, to have peace and harmony one with another. And that becomes the very place which God can speak to man. And that even becomes God's oracle. And this is the Ark. Very good. 3,500 years ago, such a thing was built. Jesus has not come yet. But on this earth, there was something signifying him, representing him, typifying him. There was such a thing. This was the reason why, from Moses, all the Jewish people regarded this Ark to the uttermost. They always consider this is their very God's presence. David removed this ark into his stronghold to go to God. When he went to the ark, that meant he went to God.
Bob, there are many items that typify Christ in various aspects, but I don't know that any are as rich and complete as this one, the Ark. It's marvelous, isn't it, in how it signifies, typifies Christ?
Yes, it is tremendous. The Ark was made of acacia wood.
Right.
And it was overlaid with gold. In the Bible, acacia wood typifies the high and uplifted humanity of the man Jesus. Mm. And gold typifies God's divine nature. So this box signifies the very Christ as the God-man, the incarnated God who has both humanity and divinity. In the eyes of the people of Israel in the Old Testament, The significance of this ark was that it represented God's very presence with his people. When the ark was placed in the tabernacle, God in his glory appeared on the cover of the ark between the two cherubim. And that cover on the ark became the place where God and his people met together and where God spoke to his people. This is a tremendous thing. And when David put it in the tent in Zion, when he moved it to the tent, when he went to that ark, he was going to God because God actually appeared on the cover of the ark. And this is, of course, a full picture of Christ. When Christ came, God came to be with man in a physical form. And then when Christ went through death and resurrected, he became a life-giving spirit, and he entered into our spirit. Now he's the ark. He's the very presence of God, which is God himself, right within our spirit. So this is a tremendous matter, this matter of the ark. So we could say that the present resting place of the ark is not in a physical building. It's right within God's people, right in our regenerated spirit. This is Christ as the life-giving spirit dwelling within us to give us all the benefits of God's wonderful presence.
All right, let's come back and look a little bit more at some of the detail of David and his desire to bring the ark into the city of David now, the capital, Jerusalem, and even to Zion, the very height of God's meeting with his people on earth, represented in Zion. In chapter 6 of 2 Samuel, and I've condensed a section here of 10 verses and tried to ellipsis, not so that we lose any important meaning, but to get the gist of what's happening here. Let me just read this passage quickly. And David rose up and went with all the people who were with him from Bela, Judah, to bring up from there the ark of God, which is called by the name of Jehovah of hosts, who is enthroned between the cherubim. And they set the ark of God upon a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab. Of course, the house of Abinadab is where the ark was held temporarily for something like 20 years. And they brought the ark of God out of the house of Abinadab, and when they came up to Nacon's threshing floor, Uzzah reached out for the ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen had stumbled. And the anger of Jehovah was kindled against Uzzah, and God struck him there for his error, and he died there by the ark of God. And David was afraid of Jehovah that day, and he said, "How shall the ark of Jehovah come to me?" So David did not want to remove the ark of Jehovah to himself in the city of David. But David carried it aside to the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite. And Jehovah blessed Obed-Edom and all his household. So David went and brought up the ark from the house of Obed-Edom into the city of David with rejoicing. And David danced with all his might before Jehovah. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of Jehovah with shouting and with the sound of the trumpet. Quite a celebration, quite a joyous occasion. Finally, the ark had made this trek, even though there were some lessons to be learned along the way, right, Bob, which we'll see.
That's right, Chris.
All right, here's Witness Lee for our final segment.
After the children of Israel entered into the good land, this ark stayed in Shiloh. Then it was captured by the Philistines. Then it was returned to Beth Shemesh from the land of the Philistines. Then it was removed from Beth Shemesh to Kiriath Jearim and put into the house of Abinadab, and staying there for 20 years. Now, there he became a guest. God became a guest. Our God, by that time, was homeless, and he was full of pigeons. He just stayed there for 20 years. Now, here's one man who was, according to God's heart, he knew thoroughly what God desired. God desired to have a lodging, to have a home, his own home. David knew this, but to remove the ark the Philistine way by a cart, God would not tolerate with his people. Here you can see God's sovereignty. God didn't say, "Stop, you made a mistake. I need to correct you." God didn't say anything. All of a sudden, the action, God's temple. One man had a good heart. He touched the ark to help the ark to stand. He got killed. The natural hand, the common hand, the hand of man, touching something divine. That is the embodiment of the triune God. Right away, that man dead there. Then the ark was removed to another house, another guest house, the house of Obed-Edom. So David came back again to remove the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to his city Zion. Now David was crazy. David offered sacrifice to God and danced with all his might before Jehovah. That was the most rejoicing time. That was a big celebration.
Bob, before we get to the celebration, I think most Bible readers have always wondered about this section. David sends for the ark, they go to get it, and they build a nice new cart to carry it on. And yet, it seems Jehovah is not happy with this, and he causes the ox to stumble, and the ark is tipping and going to fall. And so this good man, Uzzah, holds out his hand to stabilize the ark and keep it from falling. And he ends up getting killed on the spot by Jehovah. What does all of this signify?
Well, this shows us that we should not use anything worldly or anything natural in carrying out God's work, in touching the divine things, the things of God. In moving the ark by a cart, the Israelites actually used the Philistines' way. This represents the worldly way. The Philistines were close to God's people. They lived right next to God's people, and they represent worldly people who touch the things of God in a natural and worldly way. Yeah. Actually, from the days of Moses, the ark was always carried by the priests, and it should have been moved from the house of Abinadab, carried on the shoulders of the priests. But David apparently forgot about this, and he allowed the ark to be transported on a cart, just as the Philistines had done when they tried to bring the ark back.
Right.
And Uzzah also didn't realize what he was touching when he touched the ark. He was touching something that was nearly equal to God himself. And in the verse you read, you know, the ark was called by the name of Jehovah.
Right.
And Jehovah was enthroned on the cover between the cherubim. I mean, when you touch the ark, you touch something that nearly equals God. So this shows us that when we handle the things of God, we should not use any worldly methods. And we should not touch it with the hand of man, the natural way. Otherwise, the result in the spiritual sense will be spiritual death. We will sense death within when we touch God's things in a natural way. This is a tremendous lesson for us to learn, in even though we have a good heart and we want to do something for God. No doubt Uzzah had a good heart and David had a good heart, but their way was not according to God.
Wow, what a lesson. But no wonder when he finally got it safely to Jerusalem, he was filled with a desire to celebrate, Bob.
Oh, that was a great day, a day of celebration, because the ark had been returned to Jerusalem, and it was going to be, in the future, put into the Holy of Holies of the temple. God was going to have a dwelling place on the earth. And when we touch this matter in our relationship with God, we will have a similar rejoicing. It will be a day of celebration when we are caring for God's interest to build up his dwelling place, which today is the church, composed of all the believers in Christ. When we care for the church as God's dwelling place, we will celebrate.
I'm looking forward to these coming messages. Hope you're able to join us for a number of them, Bob.
I look forward to it, Chris.
Before we go, I'd like to give you the free number. I invite you, while we have about 8 or 9 programs yet to go in Samuel, there's still time if you'd like to receive the printed life study volume for the life studies of Samuel, both 1 and 2 Samuel. Join us again. We'll continue now in the book of 2 Samuel. For Bob Danker, I'm Chris Wilde. Thank you very much for listening today.